Memory Static is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions really make a difference in helping us keep the show going. So please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that finds the movies you loved when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. Each episode features a new movie chosen by a guest and a new original song inspired by the movie we cover. My name is Bailey Moore, and my guest tonight is dog lover and creative mastermind El Cuddy.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm really glad you're here.
I'm super excited about this.
Well, so tell us just a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Canada. That tends to be something that people find very fascinating about me. I am a creative living in Austin, hopefully living my best life. I would hope that's my goal.
I think you're doing pretty well.
Thank you. I work real hard on it.
Well, as we can see by what you're wearing.
Oh, yes. Thank you. This old thing?
Yeah. I'm going to ask you to describe it to everyone in just a moment when we reveal what movie it's going to be. But
okay.
So Elle and I work together at a summer camp called Camp Half-Blood, which is based on the Percy Jackson books and brings the world of the books to life for the campers. And it occurred to me while I was researching this and knowing that you were coming that you're not the first person from our camp family that we've had choose a movie. The first one was Aaron Price, and he chose the movie Hook.
I think there's a theme here.
I think there's a theme here. So, like, tell us what movie we're going to be watching.
So we are going to be watching my favorite movie of all time, The Lost Boys.
Yes, The Lost Boys. And you know, camp being what it is, and it returns us to this endless summer of play that it seems like time has just stopped and restarted every summer. Isn't it funny that both you and Aaron both chose a movie that is very much inspired by, if not directly related to, the Peter Pan?
Great minds think alike.
I know, isn't it great?
I think it's fantastic
because I love both of these movies.
Yeah, Hook is definitely my close second. And for a while they fought each other among one of my favorite movies, but it's definitely Lost Boys.
Definitely Lost Boys. So you really like Peter Pan story?
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly important narrative of just modern society, because there's so much to dig through in that book. Like every page, no matter how many times you've read it, there are these wonderful little pockets of the way words fit together that just create like this surprise image for you that you never really noticed before. And then you immediately think like, okay, well, what does that mean? Because there's so much in there that is, what does it mean?
Have you read the play or the novelization?
I'm bad. I haven't actually read the play, but I've read the novelization several times.
I haven't read either. It's been something I've wanted to read for a while.
It's a lot of fun. It's a nice, easy read.
So The Lost Boys was released in 1987, directed by Joel Schumacher, written by Jan Fisher, James Jeremias, and Jeffrey Boehm, starring Jason Patric, Kiefer Sutherland, Diane West, Corey Haim, and Corey Feldman. So before we move on, can you give us like a brief summary of the movie without any spoilers, to the best of your ability?
Okay, without any spoilers. Sam and Michael are brothers, and that's Corey Haim and Jason Patric, and they move with their mom, who's recently divorced, to Santa Carla, California, where their grandfather lives. And Michael kind of falls in with a bad crowd.
You could say that.
And you find out they're vampires.
Ooh.
And they ride motorcycles and have really great hair.
I think that's a perfect summary.
Yeah, I think that's really all that matters.
It really is. So, okay, so tell us why you chose The Lost Boys.
Okay. I love this movie for so many reasons. I mean, one of them is just like, it's visually so much fun. The costumes are phenomenal. But also because it is, I feel like, a very faithful retelling of Peter Pan, but like a spooky version.
Right. Well, yeah. And what's great too is if you didn't know, like, the reference, The Lost Boys in the title, you might not know it was a Pan story. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, I mean, also for me, I love that bit about it. But also when I first saw it, I was kind of like, oh, I mean, you know, it's like, it's a great movie. I like it. And then I started watching it again and again. It was like,
like, there's something else there's going on.
Something
here
that's really drawing me to it. And I think it's really mainly because it is like a dark retelling of Peter Pan. I've come to this place where the reason why I love Peter Pan is because it's like this, it's actually a very scary book. I mean, the idea of a perpetually 12-year-old boy who remembers nothing mm-hmm. is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool because Peter Pan's shadow is inspired by J.M. Barrie, the author of Peter Pan, his brother who died when they were both very young, and very mysteriously the shadow and like the dark parts of Peter Pan that are associated with death and the things that are unknown. It's inspired by his dead brother, whose name is David.
That is so wild.
And that's the main vampire in this book. And there's like this, or in this movie. And at the end, there's this scene where David is sitting in the rafters and his face is obscured by shadows and he's just chuckling. And you're like, that is
the shadow.
It's essentially the shadow version of the nursery scene in Peter Pan.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. I just got chills.
It's spooky, but in a fun way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you first saw it?
I was 12 or 13. And my best friend at the time was like, hey, I have this movie that I really want you to watch because I'm really into 80s stuff. And at the time, I had probably read at least 3 of the Anne Rice novels. And I was like, whatever, those aren't real vampires. Real vampires.
wait, before you continue, what do you mean by that? What you felt that, which vampires did you not feel were real vampires? The one in Anne Rice?
The ones in Lost Boys.
I was like, whatever.
They just, you know, they're like in the 80s and they ride motorcycles. And then I was like, oh, they're in the 80s and they ride motorcycles.
They aren't real vampires.
They're better. No. It just grew on me so much. Because I had just seen Interview with the Vampire at sort of right in the same vein. But I think it's the same vein.
That's...
but one. I think The Lost Boys is the one that's really grown with me because I think it is a movie that is highly relatable just on a level of like teen drama. But I think also everyone's had the experience of like there's this cool group of people and they want to fit in with them. Mm-hmm. And they may not be quite what you think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, I think the movie is a bit about peer pressure.
Oh, it's definitely about peer pressure.
And like the way that Jason Patrick, you know, how he behaves. Well, I don't want to, no, we don't want to talk about this right now because we're not in the time machine. There shouldn't be spoilers. Okay. So you said you were 12. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I think that 12 is a really good age to see this because, you know, you're a little bit older, kind of on that threshold of becoming a teenager. And this is a really exciting movie. And the people are really exciting with like their fashion and like, you know, being kind of the bad kids.
I know what you're going to ask.
So they were purposefully made 18 and 20 years old to become like hip and sexy. So did you find yourself drawn to any of these characters?
Okay. Yes and no. First, the reason no. I think it's more what you're drawn to, like their group as a whole and the way that they live as a whole and the way that they exist as sort of like this extra societal unit that mm-hmm. it's a family unit for sure, which is really interesting. But they're not bound by society's rules, which I think is really cool, especially because the vampire trope initially started out in certain mythologies. The vampire trope was severely, severely obsessive compulsive to the point where if you wanted a vampire to never rise from its grave again, you had to pour a bunch of rice or a bunch of oats, a bunch of spilled grains in its grave.
I really love that part of vampire lore. That and the fact that vampires are supposed to smell like rotten fruit are a couple of my favorite details.
They're like such strange little tidbits.
I know, it's really strange.
And it's interesting because every culture has a vampire creature, and a lot of them have these really similar qualities. But the obsessive compulsive part, I think, is really fascinating because the vampire would be then compelled to count every single grain of rice. And the idea is that if you poured enough in there, they wouldn't be able to rise for the night and cause havoc. What I love, you know, having obsessive compulsive disorder, which I actually think is really kind of a blessing in a way because it allows you to see things in a creative way. But seeing a monster trope, because, you know, humanity explores things by looking at monster tropes. And then seeing that be completely turned on its head and having vampire characters who have absolutely no regard for societal rules or norms. They are completely the opposite of like this obsessive compulsive character. And I think it's really indicative of the way that the vampire sort of mythos in literature has really evolved from, you know, early myths. And then especially like through Victorian England, where everyone is obsessed mm-hmm. with vampires. And then moving into more modern, where everyone is still obsessed with vampires. But yeah, I had a crush on Paul for sure.
Short answer.
Yeah. But it's the idea of them. I think it's the reason, like, I think it's part like, it's why Wendy is so attracted to Peter Pan. It's like not the fact that he's physically attractive to her. It's the fact that he is all the things that society does not let her be.
Right. Absolutely. And hold on 1 second. I had a thought and I've lost it.
It's okay. It's one of those days.
It's one of those days. If there was something that you said, whatever.
It'll come back.
Yeah, it'll come back, hopefully. Oh, I almost had it. Okay, whatever. So, yeah. I think, you know, my last question, I think you might have just answered. But, we're just going to skip that. So, do you have any other memories of this movie and what it meant to you when you were younger? Are you ready to get into that big old humming time machine over there?
Let's get into the time machine.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All time machine systems online. Systems go.
Well, here we are.
This is fantastic. You know, it's smaller on the outside than I thought it would be.
Ha ha. You are the first person to say that one.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an optical illusion. It seems like it's only smaller on the outside.
It's very clever. Very clever.
Thank you. Thank you. I do pat myself on the back often about it. So you do know, like, what's going on now that you've stepped in here?
Yeah. I think I got the general idea.
Okay, so yeah. What's your understanding?
So when we're in here, we're moving slightly faster than everybody else, but only like a smidgen faster. And there's part of me out there also watching the movie.
Yes, exactly. I know that sounds really confusing to anyone that has just kind of started listening with us. Wow, what was that?
That was odd.
Did you hear that?
It was like the toenails of a hound, perhaps a hound of hell.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Do we have a vampire on board?
Okay. I certainly didn't invite them in.
I didn't. Eric?
Don't look at me.
Huh. Okay, well, that's kind of eerie.
Allergic to dogs.
No. Did you invite a vampire in?
Because you have to invite them in.
Oh, I might have done that.
Eric! Oh, geez.
This was okay, now we have... Okay, all right. Well, let's... you got your garlic.
Garlic don't work, to quote the movie.
What do we need, Elle?
Holy water.
Do you have your holy water?
No, fresh out.
Flip.
But yeah, the quote from the movie that I love is, "Garlic don't work, boys."
That's a good one. Oh no. Okay, well, hopefully we will just, you know, the vampire, I mean, it's still a little light out. I don't know. Well, we'll see.
We'll keep our eyes open.
We'll keep our eyes open. Okay, so yes, so you have been split into two. We both have, and Eric as well. And our existence is in here, but it's also outside of the time machine, watching the movie with everyone else. We're moving slightly faster here, and so that we can talk about it and then rejoin ourselves at the party.
Right, got it.
So if you feel woozy, let me know.
Okay, I think I'm good.
Okay, great, good. So a disclaimer to anyone listening in this portion, this is the portion we talk about certain aspects of the movie that may be spoilers if you haven't watched it. If you need to, this is the place to pause and watch the movie and come back. You can rent it on Amazon Prime. You don't have to watch it to listen, but this is just your fair warning.
Spoiler alert. In other words.
Exactly. So, in my opinion, I feel like this has got to be one of the best super 80s movies that I can think of. I mean, it's got vampires. It's got 80s punk. It's got MTV. It's got video rental store. It's got sexy phone. And it's got TV Guide.
It does. It has all of those things.
Did you, like, okay, so did you ever, like, mess with TV Guides when you were younger?
No.
Okay. Did y'all get them in Canada?
We did. Yes, we got them in Canada.
I'm just making sure. I feel like you can't really assume anything about anything.
Cultural differences.
Yeah.
Cultural differences.
I used to, whenever we got a TV guide with the newspaper, I would read the TV guide just like Grandpa.
To know what happens on the TV, because if you read the TV guide.
I mean, I would actually watch the TV, but, you know, I would circle the things that I wanted to watch in the TV programming.
Yeah, I think that's what you're supposed to do.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's the general idea of it. Well,
my parents didn't do that. I was just like, what's on TV? Okay. Anyway, so as we've already illustrated, The Lost Boys was originally conceived as a Peter Pan story.
Yes, and the original actors were, the idea was that they were going to be much younger.
Yes. Okay, so tell us a little bit about that. That's what I was about to talk about.
Sorry. The initial idea was to have the actors be more like quite a bit younger, like early teens, like very early teens. Mm-hmm. But they scrapped that idea and they were like, you know what? We want them to look, and this is the makeup design, one of the makeup designers said that they wanted them to look like sexy demon angels. I think they accomplished that quite well.
Yeah, that's a pretty accurate description.
Yeah.
Of what they are. Especially since they fly.
Yeah, they do.
It was supposed to be like a Goonies version with vampires.
Yeah.
And the idea that Peter Pan was a vampire kind of came from the fact that Peter Pan never aged. He could fly, and he could only visit Wendy's window at night.
Yeah.
Which, like, put in that context, I'd never thought about how creepy that actually is.
It's real creepy.
Yeah, so the direction kind of turned a little bit once the original director stepped out to do Lethal Weapon. It was Richard Donner, and he's replaced by Joel Schumacher. And so the vision changed from that kind of buddy boy hijinks mystery gang kind of thing to being more peer pressure sexy 80s
it's
punk.
It feels like, having recently watched the third season of Stranger Things, it feels remarkably similar, like the attitude.
Wow, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about
putting
that,
it out there. Yes. If anyone redoes Lost Boys, please get the people who did Stranger Things to do it. Thank you.
So a lot of the Peter Pan illusions were dropped that they had planned. But so Michael and John was originally, it was Michael and John, but then they changed to Michael and Sam, and Wendy became Lucy, the mother. Mm-hmm. And then Peter became David. Like, I wonder if, like, the fact, like what you shared with us about, the brother of, J.M.
Barry.
Yes. Yeah. J.M. Barry, is being David. I wonder if it was intentional. Do you know?
I hope it was, and I kind of think it was, but I can't say for sure. And it's also like a really
Such a crazy coincidence.
Yeah.
But the one mainstay of like the kind of holdover from all of that is the dog's name, which is Nanook.
I was going to say witch dog, but.
Right. Not Thorn.
Nanook.
Yeah. Nanook, who's the
Siberian husky.
Yes. He's Siberian husky and he's Michael and Sam's dog.
Mostly Sam's. Yeah.
Right. But that's is supposed to be kind of an allusion to Nana.
I never thought about that actually.
Yeah. So the movie was filmed in only 3 weeks in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And there were some issues.
Oh yeah.
With filming it in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. that Santa Cruz were felt personal about, and it was almost put to a stop. Like they weren't going to let them film it there. Do you know why?
Yeah, because at one point, Santa Cruz was the murder capital of the world. They had not one, but two serial killers at the same time.
Yes, that's... Yeah, and a mass murderer.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody listening, at the beginning of the movie, when the family moves to Santa Clara...
Carla.
Santa Carla. Yeah. There's a big sign that says murder capital of the world. And Santa Cruz really didn't want to have that moniker... reintroduced to their whole existence because between the years of 1970 and 1973, Santa Cruz was terrorized by, as Elle said, a mass murderer and two serial killers, one of which was Edmund Kemper, the co-ed killer. And all of that happened in less than 30 months. So like, you know, that, and considering that the movie was filmed in 1987, that was not that
it was actually far filmed, into the history in 84, so it was even closer.
Oh, because they filmed it in 84.
They filmed it because I know it was released and a year at least after they finished filming.
Okay, so it wasn't that long that had happened, so of course really they tight. Really weren't eager to relive that, and
especially since they're largely a tourism town.
Right. So their solution was to rename the town to
Santa Carla.
And they didn't really have a problem with it after that, as long as it wasn't Santa Cruz.
Even though it's very obviously Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I know, very obviously. And what's interesting, though, is that in the decades following, Santa Cruz has completely embraced their association with the Lost Boys.
Absolutely.
Have you gone to visit?
I have.
Have you found all of the different sites in the movie?
I found several of them. The bridge that is right next to the boardwalk is not the bridge that's in the movie. They use the Iron Horse Bridge, which I think is actually in Santa Clarita, but the bridge that's right next to the boardwalk is remarkably similar. And it's very fun because the urban legend is they had to barbed wire it off after the movie was released so that no one would go and like hang off the bottom of it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because it's only, I want to say, like 20 feet above a tidal river.
And that's such a danger. Oh my gosh.
But I think it's still an active train bridge.
Wow.
But I've been on that bridge.
I wonder
really
if anybody
cool.
got hurt trying to.
I hope not.
I hope not. But so if you go to the visitor's website of Santa Cruz, there is a free map that you can print off that has all of the different landmarks in the film.
Oh, man, there's
so
a
you can
map
take
now?
Your you could take yourself on a tour.
I went pre-map.
You figured it out on your own.
Well, we went to the comic book store, which is not in the same place, but we met the owner of the comic book store, who's actually in the movie in the background of one of the comic book store scenes.
Mm-hmm. The pinball, playing pinballs.
Which was even though the pinball machine was actually off in
really?
The movie.
Yeah. It probably was making too much noise.
It was.
Yes. So they have the map that you can print off. And then every summer they do a special screening of The Lost Boys on the Santa Cruz boardwalk mm-hmm. for free. You just have to bring your own chair.
Yeah. And a lot of the cast come out. And,
wow. That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's really neat. Have you done
it? At least
for
a couple of the screenings, the cast have come out. I have not. I would love to. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You should definitely do that.
It'd be a blast.
So you mentioned the comic book store.
Yes.
It's an Atlantis fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that the owner was in the movie. But did you know that he has the copy of the comic book Vampires Everywhere?
It's on the wall.
Did you take a picture with it?
I didn't take a picture with it.
Oh, so apparently he lets people like that come in, hold it, and take pictures with it for free.
Yeah. I think that was like, I went before he probably decided to do that. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm really sad.
Oh, well.
I have to go back.
It just, yeah. I mean, you go back and you go see the movie on the boardwalk and you take your gosh darn picture with the comic
book.
You're
going to go and demand it.
Yeah, you're going to go and demand it. That's right. So, okay. So, we can't really talk about the Lost Boys without talking about the Coreys. Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. And it's impossible to do that without getting a bit dark. So this is a trigger warning. You may want to skip forward a minute if you find it too upsetting, because we're going to talk about how children have been treated in Hollywood. So this was the first movie that Corey Haim and Corey Feldman starred in together.
Yeah.
And they had so much charisma together that it kind of sparked this 80s trend of having them star in films together as a duo.
They're in everything together after that.
Can you list off a couple of them? Because
I know they're in License to Drive.
Yes, they are.
And I can't think of any more after that. Okay. Oh, Dream a Little Dream. I think they were in Dream a Little Dream together.
There were a few, and I had trouble searching. if you search in Corey Haim and Corey Feldman movies together, it really doesn't come up with much. It just tells you what movies they were on individually, and I really didn't feel like staring at that for so long.
Lists upon lists.
Yeah,
upon
lists. But they were in several together. And in the years to follow, because they became very good friends, they kind of egged each other on, partying really hard, doing lots of drugs, and making some really bad decisions. And all of which were likely influenced by very deep trauma that they had both had. So during the production of The Lost Boys, Corey Feldman got fired. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he got fired because he came to set after doing cocaine for the first time.
Oh, boy.
And he had gotten into his mother's stash, who had an obvious drug addiction problem. And he was unaware of what the come down was going to be like, because he'd never done anything like that before. And he got on set and was falling asleep during the shoot. So the director fired him. But then he went to the director the next day and apologized and promised never to do it again. And he was rehired. So if he hadn't been rehired, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim may never have bonded the way that they did, which is a very powerful bond. And Haim later recounted that the filming of The Lost Boys was one of the greatest personal experiences of his life, largely in part to the forming of this friendship. And while the older cast members would let off steam in the evening with drinks, the two Coreys, because they were younger, they would hang out with each other watching movies together in their hotel rooms, and they would have deep and personal conversations. So it's during that time that they both revealed to each other that they were victims of sexual abuse. And the bond between them remained until Haim's early death in 2010. And Corey Feldman has been successfully able to recover from drug addiction and has written a pretty intimate memoir called Choreography, where he divulges that what the behind-the-scenes experiences were like for child stars. You know, and it's really hard to think about these two actors who were so beloved and so iconic in the 80s in movies being the subject of abuse. Yeah. But it's really incredible that Corey Feldman is so open about his experiences and so that he might prevent similar things happening to kids in the future.
Yeah, it's horrible to think about that.
It really is. I'm not really sure how to transition to the next part because this is like such a serious thing. But we're going to talk some more about vampires.
And, sounds good.
So Kiefer Sutherland
mm-hmm.
has the least amount of lines but by far, I think, has the most electric performance.
Definitely.
Okay, so you agree.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that he has such few lines because he's such a huge presence in the movie. And
every line he delivers is just like, it's perfect. You kind of have to stop after and you're like, whoa.
It really is perfect.
Yeah.
And so here's my confession moment. I did not see this movie until I was in high school.
Okay.
And it was on TV. But when I was younger, I had a weird crush on Kiefer Sutherland. And it was from The Three Musketeers.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it's because that character has like the biggest romantic storyline.
Yeah.
And so I wish that I had seen it when I went Lost Boys when I was 12, because I would have been like, ooh. But it's funny because just funny stories from like a tangent maybe. But when a few years ago I was dating this person and I thought like, wow, they're really handsome and like they look sort of familiar. Like, who do they look like? And finally it occurred to me that they looked like Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it didn't last. But whatever. So up until this point, vampires hadn't really been able to get out of Dracula's shadow.
Correct.
And vampires in film were mostly older and stuffier.
Yeah, very like that Christopher Lee kind of.
Yes.
Which was great, but very different.
Yes, very different. And this was the first depiction of younger kind of
edgy,
edgy hedonistic vampires.
And then Near Dark came out right around the same time.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen that movie. I tried finding it and it wasn't like easily available, so I didn't get a chance.
I like Lost Boys better. I know people would fight me for that, but I do.
Okay, well, I'll watch it and I'll decide whether or not I'm gonna fight you about that. But right, so It was also one of the first times that the struggle of a human vampire romantic relationship was really explored, especially one where the human was not being preyed upon. It, like, it's not in the same way.
Yeah, and the human is a guy.
Yeah, he's a guy. He's not a woman. Yeah, but there's no, like, he doesn't get bitten. You know, he drinks something, some mysterious liquid. Yeah. And so that, like, those two things were huge as far as like vampires being represented in film. And it kind of paved the way for things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I love.
And they actually used Greg Canham's makeup model for that. Pretty much all vampire makeup in Buffy looks exactly like Lost Boys.
Yeah, actually, I was gonna say, so they say vamp out, and that term is used in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's like a common thing.
Yeah, because, the first time they use
because
that one
they have
Lost Boys.
Their beautiful human faces, smooth human faces, and then suddenly they vamp out
like
and they
brows.
Become like these demon faces with no eyebrows. It's
just like sort of bulges for eyebrows.
Yeah,
it works though.
Their eyebrows disappear when they show their demon faces.
Yeah, and they get those red eyes.
Yeah.
Which in the 80s, contacts were made of glass.
Ugh. Oh, that's awful. I think my uncle had early contacts.
Oh.
Like, if it slips, what happens?
I don't know. I don't want to think about
it. It's really scary. So apparently, eyebrows are a really human thing.
Yeah. Interesting, because David Bowie shaved off his eyebrows when he was Ziggy Stardust, so he would look more otherworldly.
I wonder if that influenced at all, like, the depiction of vampires.
I wonder.
I don't know. But, okay, so Kiefer Sutherland. Did you know that Jim Carrey was considered for the role of David?
I think it was on the periphery of my mind, but it wasn't maybe Jim Carrey. It was like someone else I thought they considered for the role. And it was kind of like, no.
That would have changed the movie entirely.
It would have been very odd.
I feel like, you know, the Lost Boys does have an element of humor to it.
Definitely.
But with Jim Carrey as the main head vampire, I just can't imagine him having that kind of domineering.
I mean, he's Ace Ventura.
Yeah, well, he was already in a vampire movie, Once Bitten.
Yep.
And I think that one is pretty silly.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've watched it, so I don't really remember. But yeah.
This just would be so strange.
It would just, you know, talk about vampires not having eyebrows. I think his eyebrows would show through that makeup.
Yeah.
Just doing his rubbery stuff with his face.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just like raising my eyebrows in what I think to be a Jim Carrey-like way. Okay, so David.
Yes.
Kiefer Sutherland's character.
Yes.
Do you find anything strange about the way that he dies in the movie?
Yeah. Pretty sure it doesn't go through his heart.
Also, how does he die?
Impaled on antelope horns.
Yes. Have you ever seen anything where a vampire is killed with antelope horns?
No, but it's such a good bit for the fact that the grandfather is a taxidermist.
That is true. That is very true. I didn't think about it that way. But all the other vampires else? Kind of like disintegrate or...
They all have really unique deaths.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He has a unique death. I mean, I just mean he doesn't fall apart. He just kind of very quietly...
Well, we don't know what happened to Marco's body. Although I'm pretty sure that since the Frog Brothers are not masters of human anatomy, they probably didn't hit his heart.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, okay, so... The reason why David dies, with air quotes, the way that he does, is because there had always been plans for a sequel.
Yep.
Called The Lost Girls.
Yeah.
And David was meant to return because he didn't die.
They actually did do a comic series.
Called?
I think it was just, I think it was called Lost Boys Reign of Frogs.
That's what it's called. Yeah. Isn't that weird? Like, why Reign of Frogs?
Because it's about the Frog Brothers.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, the sequel is alluded to in the end of the book, and the book is based on the screenplay. And they go into the cave at the end, and they're like, oh, we heard noises down in the tunnel. Maybe it's not completely empty. Woo.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now that the title makes a lot more sense, and I feel pretty foolish that I didn't make that connection. I was just like,
it's okay.
Rain of Frogs. Especially since I wanted to think of it as R-A-I-N and not R-E-I-G-N.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the weird situations where frogs rain from the sky. Okay, so they never made The Lost Girls. But there was eventually
we're gonna talk about them, aren't we?
just barely. There was a direct to video sequel called The Tribe.
There were two of them.
There were two, but
The Thirst and The Tribe.
Was The Thirst first?
I can't remember.
I think The Tribe
generally
was first.
Lost Boys fans tend to
pretend they don't exist. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. But I did find it interesting that that other movie stars the one we're not going to talk about anymore.
No, we can totally talk about it. Kiefer's baby brother.
Yes.
Yeah.
His half brother Angus is the star.
Yeah,
I thought that was funny. And there are plans for a TV series.
Yes, I believe the CW is taking it on.
Oh, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Well, do you like know anything about it? I couldn't find anything about it.
Yeah, they apparently hired the director who directed Twilight.
Oh.
I'm stopping there.
You know, I didn't mention it before, but Twilight was another thing that said that it was kind of inspired by The Lost Boys, or the shift that The Lost Boys made for vampires kind of paved the way for Twilight as well. But, Buffy's much better.
Yeah, Twilight's a whole other conversation. There are good things, there are bad things.
Yeah, okay, let's just move on.
I'm just going to leave it there.
So the movie was not one of the top grossing films of the year, mm-mm, but it did immensely well against its budget.
Yes.
So
it was just low budget.
Well, yeah, I mean, it had a budget of $8.5 million. And grossed $32.2 million. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I have to say, I think this is probably the most successful movie we've covered on the podcast so far.
Well, Hook was pretty successful.
Oh yeah, Hook was really successful.
I mean,
successful.
Hook was nominated for...
And there's Hook again.
Yeah, I know, there it is.
Coming back around to it. Okay, so I have a couple more fun facts before we rejoin ourselves out there.
Oh,
and,
do tell.
And see like how we felt about watching the movie and how everybody else felt about watching the movie. Okay, and these are just kind of like throwaway trivia, but the role of Max, the head vampire, Fred Gwynne was considered. Do you know who that is?
No, it's not ringing any bells.
Okay.
He should be.
He played Herman Munster in the Munsters.
Oh.
I think he would have been great.
He would have killed it.
He would have killed it.
But
so for anybody else, another reference or another thing that he did, he was the old neighbor in the original Pet Sematary.
Ah. Yeah, the guy who they got to play Max, Ed Herman, he is like 6'5". And honestly, like, he's such a goofy character that I feel like he has no business being in a vampire movie, but he was so great.
I know, he's really great. And that's why I think, like, they obviously were looking for a certain type, because Fred Gwynne also has the kind of like goofy, chummy kind of like,
yeah,
I'm a good guy.
Like I'm a cool dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to tell you. Yeah. Okay.
Turns out though, he is a cool dad. Cause like his kids get to do whatever.
Yeah. Right. He's kind of a, you know, hands off. He has a hands off approach.
Yeah.
Lets them wreak havoc in their own personal way. Okay. So, you know that awesome robe that Sam wears in the movie?
Yes.
I love that robe.
It's great.
I want it.
It's an excellent robe.
So, I look at that robe and I think quintessential 80s.
Yep.
But I never really thought about where the design came from.
Yeah, it's super familiar.
Yeah, so it's a print inspired by the artwork of Dutch painter Piet Mondrian.
Okay.
And he was active in the first part of the 1900s. So... why was that popular in the 80s? I tried to figure that out.
Bold colors.
It's bold colors. But
distinct lines.
Very distinct lines. Very geometric. The best answer I could come up with why that particular artist, kind of got put on clothing in the 80s, is that in the 80s there was a popular Tour de France championship team called the La Vie Claire.
Okay.
And I think there was one or two Canadian cyclists in that team.
Oh.
And several of their members won, you know, like they were, I mean, it was a very popular team, and their jerseys The design of their jerseys was inspired by that artist.
Oh. And so then it probably just blew up from there.
Who knows? Who knows?
Speaking of Canadians, you know who's Canadian?
Who?
Kiefer Sutherland.
Isn't there more than one Canadian? Isn't Corey Haim?
Corey Haim, yeah.
Yeah, Corey Haim is Canadian as well.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, and then the last little bit that I have, a little tidbit that, you know, is a tidbit. You know that sexy phone guy?
Yes, Tim Capello.
Tim Capello.
What a god among men.
You know, I didn't really know anything about him.
Yeah, he used to play with Tina Turner.
Yeah, he played with Tina Turner, and he played with Peter Gabriel, and he played with Carly Simon. And he was just kind of like this guy in the 80s that was known for doing exactly what he did in the movie, which was to play the saxophone.
He does it so well.
Play the saxophone with making sexy movements. Like
covered
sexual,
in oil.
Sexy movements without a shirt, covered in oil.
Wearing like chains around his neck.
Yes. With his hair pulled back in a ponytail.
Yeah.
And I found that there was a character on SNL that was directly inspired by Tim Capello. And then a few years ago, there were those viral videos that went out with the sexy phone guy that was popping up in random places playing Careless Whispers. So that guy... that whoever did that was either inspired by the character in SNL who was inspired by Tim Capello, or he was inspired directly by Tim Capello.
It's pretty inspiring, that whole scene. The music's great. The song is great.
I think that might be one of my favorite parts of the whole movie, just because it is so odd.
It's so strange. And unfortunately, that bandstand, which is on the beach, is not there anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it was destroyed in the 89 earthquake.
Oh, that's Ooh. Also why the comic book store
yeah, that's
had
why
to
the
move.
Comic book store moved. But the roller coaster on the boardwalk is the oldest wooden roller coaster in the U.S.
Wow, that's really
still
cool.
operating. Yeah,
well, that's very cool.
The Big Dipper.
The Big Dipper. Well, do you have anything else to add, or are you ready to rejoin yourself out there?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think of if there's anything else to add. I feel like there are so many things in my head, but I'm not coming up with anything.
That's okay. I feel like, you know, you are such a fan of this movie, and you hold so much of that information in your head. It's got to be really difficult to, like...
Oh, I do have one thing.
Okay.
Is that when you go onto the beach off of the boardwalk in Santa Cruz, there's a sign, and the first three things on the sign that are banned are all from the movie.
Really?
Especially like the first three or four things. Obviously no smoking, because cigarettes are bad for the ocean. No bonfires. And no alcohol. And no motorcycles.
Wow. Yeah, I bet people were really wanting to ride their motorcycles on the beach to relive the scene.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild scene.
It is. Okie dokie. All right.
Let's do
it. So you ready to rejoin yourself? You feeling a little weird? I'm feeling a little weird. And I'm used to this.
I'm feeling a little weird, but like in a good way.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Okay.
All passengers must return to their respective times. Goodbye.
Well, here we are at the end of The Lost Boys. Elle, how are you feeling after rejoining yourself?
A little woozy, but I think I'm good. I'm good.
Great. Well, you know, I realized earlier I mentioned the clothes you're wearing, but I neglected to ask you to describe it like I promised. Can you go ahead and give us a description of what you're wearing?
Yes. This is a jacket that is a tailcoat, and... it has a bunch of chains and stuff hanging off of it, and I made it. And it is supposed to be very much like Paul's jacket in the movie, because every single character in this movie has an excellent jacket.
Very true.
Yeah. And Paul's is my favorite.
And you wore that for Halloween.
Yeah, I wear it a lot.
For
it weighs like 5 pounds, so my shoulders are always really sore, but I like it.
And you brought a couple other really cool stuff with you.
Yeah. Because I'm an ultra nerd. I have the wine bottle from the movie.
That you made yourself?
Yes, I did. I made it myself. Thanks. And I also have the book, which is based on the screenplay for the movie. And there are a lot of like the deleted scenes that are in it. It explains how Michael got the money to buy a leather jacket. Even though he had just said that they were flat broke.
And how did he?
He got a job picking up trash on the beach in the daytime.
Oh.
So it was kind of boring, so they cut it.
Well, yeah. I feel like it just made everything much fuller for me.
Yeah, and then I have a little David figurine that someone gave me when I was in high school, and I found it at my mom's house and decided I needed it.
It's pretty incredible. I didn't know they'd made figurines for this movie.
Yeah, there's one of David and there's one of Michael.
Well, thank you for sharing them with us tonight. So we're going to open it up to everybody else that came. How's everybody feeling?
I'm so glad y'all shared this movie with me. It's my favorite.
Yes. Thank you all for coming. Does anybody else have any kind of memories of watching this when they were younger that they'd like to share?
Who among you?
I can share. Okay. I remember watching this movie as a young person, and it's one of the, you know, epitomal Corey's movies with the Haim and Feldman, and there's certain iconic moments, especially like I was thinking coming in, like, yeah, the part with like the maggots and the Chinese food and all that and the worms, so good. yeah, just like certain images burned into my brain. The lady that plays Star is like so beautiful. Just like this like iconic image emblazoned in my brain. Yeah, I liked it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Oh.
It's not when I was younger, but I went to college in Santa Cruz where a lot of this movie was filmed. And so this movie was screened several times a year. And we would often show it in the Porter Caves, which is a cave system very similar, I guess, to the caves in the movie itself. So that is kind of my memory, is the obsession of my college town.
It's really cool.
Okay. So Michael drinks out of a bottle of what he thinks is wine. And then we find out that it is not wine. But for all we know, it could have been. It could have been his first taste of alcohol. I doubt it, but it could have been. So, you know, it would explain why he couldn't tell the difference. So, does anybody have a story to tell of the first experience ever tasting alcohol?
So when I was little, me and my sister and my grandma would watch Are You Afraid of the Dark together. And there was one time we watched an episode and I was really afraid and I didn't want to go get water, but I was thirsty. And so I was like, Grandma, Grandma, like, will you please go get me a cup of water? And she's like, the fridge is right over there. And I'm like, but no, but I'm scared. And then like the lights are off. And she's like, God damn it. And then she hands me her beer and it's a Miller Lite. And then I drink it. I'm like, this is awful. And that's it.
When I was a teenager, I was hanging out with my stepdad and my uncles. And they loved to drink alcohol, and they were like, yeah, we want to see what you like to drink. And so they would give me these tiny sips of all this different booze. And I was like, okay. And then I remember the one I remember the most was Goldschlager because it had gold in it.
Yeah.
And it tasted very cinnamony. And I was like, okay, this is pretty good. But you guys, shouldn't you be giving me all this alcohol? Like, okay. And I don't know, I probably tried like 10 different things that night, and it wasn't a lot to, I don't think I got drunk. I'm pretty sure I didn't get, I don't know, but yeah, that's my first time I can think of trying alcohol.
I think the first time that I tried alcohol was at like my first high school party, and I just was very confused as to what was going on, so I brought the host of the party like 40 Ferrero Rocher chocolates in like a tray. And I didn't really know her well, but I was like, are people bringing gifts? And she was like, no. And I was and still am allergic to alcohol. So I think I fell asleep.
When I was younger, we did we were at the beach for a holiday. And I was very thirsty after playing on the sand, so I went over to the picnic table, and I got what I thought was grape juice, and I poured myself a nice big old glass of it, and I chugged it, and it was very bad grape juice. And then I got very dizzy, and I fell over, and I didn't really realize what was happening for a while, and my mom very much did. It was wine instead of grape juice that I thought I was drinking.
So this isn't really a story about the first time I tasted alcohol, but the first time I got drunk, which kind of, I guess, ties in with the movie because it also has a lot to do with bullying, which is that I didn't really drink alcohol in high school. And then like my friend group and I like totally split. And so like we weren't hanging out anymore. So I was trying to hang out with new friends, and they're like, do you get drunk? And I was like, no. And so they threw a party with the explicit purpose of getting me and my twin drunk. And at that point, like, my parents, my mom is Italian, and so I drank wine at dinner a lot. And so when I got to this party, they're like, what do you want to drink? I'm like, okay, I'll drink wine. And so I was drinking this wine, And we were playing some drinking game. I think it was King's Cup or something like that. And the kid sitting next to me, like poured whiskey in my wine. And I was like, why would you do that? Like, you're wasting all this good alcohol. Like, you're just not, you're not doing it right. And he like forced me to drink it. And I was like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. And he was like, let me put it to you this way. I'm your ride home in the morning. Because I had to be really spooky about this. Like, tell my mom I was sleeping at a friend's house, like the whole shebang. And he was supposed to be my ride in the morning to get home because he had a car. And so he's like, you got to drink that. And just like really peer pressured me into it. So of course, like, thankfully I had a twin. So my twin like didn't get as drunk as I did and like kept their wits about them. But he never drove us home in the morning. Like he did this like four more times, like more whiskey in my wine, and then just was, you know, hungover and like didn't drive us home in the morning. So we had to like call in a friend and be like, come get us, man. Ugh. Kids are bullies, man, sometimes. No, I don't hang out with that kid anymore. Not at all. He wasn't really a friend. He was like a friend of a friend who just like was really intent on getting me wasted.
Well, that's a pretty good segue into the next question, because I feel like one of the themes of this movie is becoming a part of a group and, you know, possibly like being peer pressured and falling into the, you know, the wrong sort of group, you know. In this movie, it's vampires. Mm-hmm. But when you were little, do you ever remember being a part of a kid formed club? And if you were, like, what were your rituals part of being in a club?
So this is more like high school, and I'm not sure if this was really like a club, more just like a few of my friends that were really close. And we would skip class, mostly boys, and go hide out in the bathroom and then spray Axe on the bathroom door stalls and then light it on fire. And we would do this a lot. And so it became kind of like our own ritual of like burning sacred symbols, more like the anarchy symbol or like pentagrams or whatever, and we just sprayed an Axe and light it on fire, and that's, you know, somehow we never got caught, and that's what we did.
I was also in like a vandalism gang in high school. My first friends that I eventually stopped hanging out with, but we all lived in the same neighborhood together, and that neighborhood was called Grandview Hills. So we were the Grandview Crew, but crew was spelled with a K, so we were GVK. And we mostly just, like, went around to, like, places adults wouldn't go, like sewage drains, and, like, tagged stuff with spray paint or, like, lit napalm on the ground or something like that. It was a lot of just, you know, just burning stuff or defacing things. It was fun.
Anybody else? Oh.
There were no rival gangs.
So I had this group of friends when I was younger, like pre-10, and we did a bunch of stuff together. We do like light as a feather, stiff as a board, or like pretend like we'd hold our breath and then we'd like pass out. And then the older sisters would be like, we're doing this thing, we're in this other plane. And then the younger sisters would be like, where are you? We need to like commune with you. But like one of the weirdest ritual things I think we did is like a lot of us were bastard children, like born outside of wedlock. And so sometimes we would like chant and like go in a circle and like say our real last names.
Whoa. Did it do anything?
I don't know. Maybe I am more of a bastard than I used to be.
So from like third to sixth grade, me and my closest friend were super into like occultism, and like we really wanted to be exorcists for some reason. And so we basically started like researching how to exorcise demons and stuff, but we didn't have any demons around, so we also researched summoning demons. And so we basically kind of started an occultism group in like our little class, I guess. And sometimes we would go, not with outside of this kind of group, we would go have sleepovers at friends' houses and stuff. And they would like want to get into it, and so we'd do like some kind of demon summoning thing there, and they'd be like, okay, how do you exorcise them? And they'd look at us and we'd be like, well, we don't really know, so good luck with that. You figure it out, dude. And that caused a lot of funny situations, but that was a kind of a similar group, I guess.
I don't know. Haley, you reminded me of a story. This is not so much of a group, but I have a friend that lived a couple houses down, and he had a trampoline in the backyard, and we would make up all sorts of games on the trampoline. And one of those games was called Vampire Vampire. And basically there would be one person that was the vampire, and they'd be in the middle of the trampoline, and everybody else had to like skirt around the edges of the trampoline, and the vampire could only turn into a bat and jump to the edge and then jump back. And it was like they kept trying to get the people that were dancing around, but it all started with a chant, and I still remember that chant. So I'm going to say it. Please don't judge me because we were little kids. It was, vampire, vampire, rise from the dead. Otherwise, we'll cut off your head. The magic words must be wookalockalockalockalockalockly. And that was how the game started.
Dude, we had a super similar game.
Really?
We called it Dead Man Rising. And so there'd be like the dead person in the middle of the trampoline, and then the other people would jump around, and then they'd have to like say the thing to wake them up. And then the dead person would close their eyes and try to chase everyone else on a trampoline. And somehow no one ever fell off the trampoline.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
I miss trampolines.
Wookalaka ni? Say it again, Bailey.
It was wookalaka, lookalaka, lookalaka li.
I feel like we need to memorize this and all chant it.
Because we need vampires?
Yeah, well, especially because of this movie. Yes. Yes.
Okay, we can do that.
Wookalaka, lookalaka, lookalaka, we.
Lee.
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 Yeah,
we need to do the whole quatrain. We can't just do the last line, you know?
That's fair. That's what brings the vampire back from the dead.
Can you train us real quick, Bailey? Can you train us real quick? Yeah. Everybody try. Let's do this. Bailey, say it first, and we all say it back.
Okay. Vampire, vampire.
Vampire, vampire.
Rise from the dead.
Rise from the dead.
Otherwise, we'll cut off your head.
Otherwise, we'll cut off your head.
The magic words must be.
The magic words must be.
Wookalaka, lookalaka, lookalaka lee.
Look-a-locka, look-a-locka,
look-a-locka,
Lee.
Ah, they're fire! It's invisible, watch out!
That was excellent, guys. Look out for the bat vampire. Okay, moving on. So clearly the grandpa is the true hero of the story. Does anybody disagree with that?
I do.
Okay. All right. I'll let you counter that before I move on to my question.
That grandpa drove a truckload of wooden spikes into a living room.
His own living room.
His own living room. What guaranteed that he didn't just kill his whole family? You know, that's all I'm saying. He may have won, but it was reckless.
It was very well planned.
And also, he knew about the vampires all along, and he didn't do anything until the very end. Yeah.
So what was your question?
Vampires. Grandparents are awesome. Does anybody have any stories about their grandparents being really awesome and badass, or just really kooky, you know, one or the other?
My grammy was all of about 5'3" and probably weighed about 100 pounds soaking wet, and she didn't used to like shrimp, and
So she'd go out with my grandpa, and my grandpa was like a big football player. He's like 6'3", so they were complete opposite ends of the spectrum. And he would always pick food off of her plate. And then she realized, you know, because your taste buds change. So after a while, she realized that she actually did like shrimp, but he didn't realize this. And so he was still picking food off of her plate. And they're like out at a very fancy restaurant. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother, ever the classy lady, she just like sits up straight, sets down her hands without even looking at him. She goes, "Bob, if you put your goddamn fork in my goddamn plate one more goddamn time, I'm going to put my goddamn fork through your goddamn hand." And from then on, he never took anything off of her plate ever again, because she was actually terrifying. Like, wonderful, lovely, lovely lady. I love my Grammy so much, but oh my God, like, she could be real scary.
I have a similar story in that my grandmother was very small, a very small woman. She's probably about 5'3 as well. But she like really had some gumption to her. And my family's like from Texas. So my grandmother's aunt had a ranch out by Dripping Springs before it was the suburbs. And my grandmother and her best friend, when they were like 16, used to go and like sit on the dam out there and just take two rifles and shoot rattlesnakes. Yeah, they were very cool.
Wow.
I'm her sister. We have the same grandmother. my grandmother was also a debutante and a riflery instructor, and she started a football team for her sorority because she wanted to do tackle football, and she was their quarterback.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah, Grandma.
My story about her that I remember was we were running, she was running late to get me and my sister to a class, and she like scratched her arm on something, and I remember it being like, I mean, I was a little kid, but I remember it being like really scary. It was like bleeding a lot, and I was like, "Grandma, your arm's bleeding." And she's like, "Oh, it's just a scratch." And she like had a bunch of napkins in the console, and she just like opened it, slapped a napkin on her arm, and then just like drove the 30 minutes to our class with like a big old gash on her arm. And I just remember sitting in the backseat like staring at it being like, "What? Like, how are you functioning? There's blood coming out of your arm." Because, you know, I was a little kid, and if you didn't get a Band-Aid, it was the end of the world.
I have a lot of stories about my grandparents and my great-grandparents, and it's hard for me to pick which one. But I think the one I want to talk about is my grandpa played a lot of music, and he was a stand-up bass player. And for a long time, he played stand-up bass, and he went through college, and he ended up getting into the first chair of the stand-up bass in the concert or whatever, and his teacher found out that he couldn't actually read music at all. And so he just kept playing, and the teacher was like, "Wait, do you know how to read music?" He's like, "No." And they're like, "Okay, well, that's fine because you're amazing." And he actually went to ACU, which is Abilene Christian University, and they weren't supposed to take their instruments to go play in the honky-tonks. But he did anyways. And so a few of him and his friends would take the music, musical instruments, and check them out and go play in the honky tonks. And he played with people like Willie Nelson and Bob Hanks. No, that's not right. Is that not? Bob Wills. Sorry, Bob Wills. And he played all of this music with all of these people, even though he wasn't supposed to. Huh? He also played with Elvis and ended up just being this really badass human that played all this music, even though he had no idea how to read music. And that's one of the stories of my grandparents. Oh,
So cool. Well, that's cool and all, but my grandfather used to drive 45 minutes across the LA Valley to save 3 cents a pound on bananas.
Okay, I'm going to say one more story. That grandpa, his dad, was alive in the 20s and through the whole depression and everything. And he ended up being in some of the, what were they called? The prohibition tents, where they would just actually drink tons of alcohol. And apparently the story is that Bonnie and Clyde came into the tent and Clyde had his leg shot up and Bonnie came up to him and was like, you need to dance with me. And he's like, I don't know if I should dance with you. And she's like, well, if you don't, I'm going to tell Clyde. And so he got up and he danced with her because that was about all the only thing he could do.
Yeah, that was cool. So my grandpa, right after his wife died, had to find a new kind of way to spend his time, make friends and stuff. And he wasn't going to let anything stop him. So he decided that even though he didn't own a yacht, he would join the yacht club. So he did that. And then, you know, while he's hanging out, having drinks, like on other people's yachts, he decided to become a minister, but like online. So he got like a degree online somehow. He also has very bad eyesight, so he has to zoom very far into websites in order to see anything at all, and can only do like voice commands to get anywhere. So it's actually kind of impressive that he was able to even get like a fake degree in anything online. Yeah, very interesting dude. That's it. No, I don't know why he got it. I just, you know, wanted to be a better man. He thought getting a degree in ministry online would help him. I don't know. No, that would be good. The get on someone else's yacht, marry someone on sea, be a good use of both of his newfound passions.
Okay. All right. Final question. Should vampires be scary or sexy?
¿Por qué no los dos?
I just want to say that I'm glad they made the boys older in the movie. I think that was a good choice because it would have made me uncomfortable if they were that sexy and also younger.
I don't think vampires can be scary without being sexy, because that's exactly what makes them terrifying, is they lure you in and then they get you.
I mean, exactly. I must say, does one not beget the other? I think it's a moot question.
Sex is scary.
I think we're all in agreement about sexy and scary going hand in hand.
Thank you for all the compliments. It really makes me feel better about myself.
I was just going to say, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love vampires, is because, like, literary-wise, they're the monster that gets to explore, because we have monsters so that we can explore different parts of ourselves without actually doing it. So, like, they are the monster that represents existentialism and sexuality as repressed by different societal rules. Kind of like how the werewolf is the inner beast repressed by societal rules, which is why all the good werewolf and vampire stories happen, for the most part, in Victorian England.
Yeah. One of those exceptions would be Ginger Snaps.
Oh. Okay, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No,
you should see it.
I'll have to check it out. I mean, Lost Boys is obviously an exception as well.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Elle, so much for sharing this movie with everybody.
Thank you so much for watching it with me. It was so much fun.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I thought about one of those trivia bits that you asked me for earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
And I forgot, but there's a reason why David is wearing gloves in half the movie and not in the rest of the movie. And it's because he broke his wrist. Kiefer Sutherland broke his wrist while showing off on his motorcycle for a bunch of girls on the beach in Santa Cruz.
Oh, you said something off the mic about them hanging upside down.
Oh, yeah. The scene where they're hanging upside down. They're like 40 feet in the air. And they were told to not get drunk the night before because they were going to have a hell of a day the next day since they had to be hung by their feet basically in shackles from the ceiling of this soundstage. And they also had to wear contacts, which in the 80s were made of glass. And that's actually why David has that tear come out after his hand gets burnt. And they decided to keep it. It was not intentional. It wasn't intentional. They decided to keep it, though. But yeah, they got hammered the night before. And then they were all hungover and upside down. Yeah. It was a really rough scene to shoot, apparently.
Very unpleasant. So don't hang upside down tonight.
Don't be hungover while you're hungover.
Well, that about wraps it up. And if you want to find out more about our events in Austin, follow us on Facebook. That is where we post the events. We want to hear your stories. So if you can't attend one of these and you have a story that about any of the movies we've covered or any of the topics that we talk about here, email us at memorystatic.com.
Memorystatic@gmail.com.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Memorystatic@gmail.com. And I guess we're ending this on the chant.
Yes. Are we doing it again? Yes, we are.
Okay.
So. Vampire, vampire, yeah.
Vampire, vampire, rise from the dead. Otherwise, we'll cut off your head. The magic words must be said.
This is Memory Static, and until next time, return your videos here.
Scroll and crumble.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumig. Special thanks to El Cuddy for being the guest on this month's episode, and a big thank you to Delilah, Geronimo, and Yakko for hosting the party. Music for this episode is by Bailey and Colin Moore. If you like the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Also, if you're listening to the show on Apple Music, consider giving us a rate and review. It helps. It's great. It feels good. As always, thanks to our party goers for coming on out and watching the movie with us and sharing your thoughts after the movie. This is a very hard time we're going through right now. And I hope y'all are doing okay. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us.